You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the co-host of this wonderful show. And join me on the other line to talk about the Pacers' first win in 12 years in Denver, Mr. Tony East. Tony,
good Lord.
At what point do you think they were going to lose this game, and at what point do you think they actually might win this game?
When they were down 10 in the third, I think, just because they looked like they had no life the entire game, I thought, okay, they're probably done. And then even when they had the lead after McDermott got them a few threes, I think Denver went back up by three a few possessions later because of all people, McDermott gave up an offensive rebound to Jeremy Grant. I thought, okay, you know, maybe Denver will right the ship, but man, the Pacers just found a way. Adam, I have a crazy one for you really quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Last time the Pacers won in Denver, Goga Bitadze was 8 years old.
You know, I think I was 10. You were probably, what, 13?
Yeah, 13. That's crazy.
So, just to recap the Pacers' week real quick. Right now, we're talking about the Pacers 115-107 winning against the Nuggets. They scored 71 second-half points. That's just, you know, amazing number. And then they beat the Wolves back-to-back this week, 104-109 at home on Wednesday, and then on Friday – in Minnesota on Wednesday, then at home against them, the Timberwolves 116-114 and another – kind of clutch performance by Brogdon and co. And they beat the Sixers start the week 101-95 to cap now what is a 5-game win streak. And more importantly, it's supposed to Pacers to tie for fourth in the East, half a game back of the 3 seed and a game and a half back of the 2 seed. And it is getting real for that 2-6 right now.
Yeah, with Vic coming back, I mean, they could push for it. That it's just insane how well they're playing and how they're still in the thick of it without him.
I know we're going to preview the rest of the West Coast road trip, but if they can go 4-1 on this West Coast road trip, assuming they lose to, let's say, Utah is back-to-back and whatnot, I mean, they could be in the driver's seat for that 2 seed. I mean, considering what – when they come back, they basically –
they have 7 or 8 of home, right, when they come back or something?
Well, first of all, they come back and they play, like, Chicago, New York, terrible teams. They get New York another time. They get Toronto a bunch of times, like 3 times in a 2-week span. So they could, one, kind of push Toronto out of the basically the top two ability by beating them enough times. And then they have like a, now I'm going to call it cupcake because they do play Dallas in there and they do play New Orleans, who's been really frisky as of late, and they play Milwaukee. But it's certainly a winnable schedule and good enough to push them, I think, up to probably at least a 2 or 3 seed for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, they can go on a nice run. I don't think Vic will be bad necessarily, but like if he can integrate just fine, like there's no reason they can't win 5 or 6 of those 8 games. You know, that's better than their win percentage, right? Like that will keep them in the thick, if not catch them up to any of those teams. Then they'll hit the All-Star break right in that race. And I know we're talking about top two just because, like, you can, you know, it's within grasp. But even just getting home court in the first round would be so huge. And they are what? Are they – they're tied with the Raptors right now, I believe?
They're tied with the Celtics, half a game back of the Raptors at
3 seed.
They beat the Celtics the one time they played, right? So they have to
take it. Yeah, that's true. There you go.
Yeah, I didn't realize how easy Boston's schedule was up until this last kind of week or two, because Boston was like 3 ahead of them in the loss column. They hadn't played enough games, and now Boston's kind of been in a tailspin. So.
Yeah, they had some injuries, but they have. Yeah,
everybody, you know what? I don't feel bad for any team with injuries. Look at the Pacers' best player's been out now, what, 45 games or 43 games?
Yeah, no, and Brogdon's missed a ton and stuff.
Yeah, like I mean, injuries are part of basketball, especially I mean, this season. It felt like everybody's had some guy hurt, some major player. So I don't like, you know, they beat Philly without Embiid earlier in the week, and it's like, yeah, you feel bad for Philly, but like the Pacers' best players been out. At times they've missed. There was definitely a game where Sabonis, Brogdon, and Oladipo all missed. I mean, that's just
they started Jakar Sampson and Goga in the same game one time. Yeah, I think twice actually.
I'm not feeling bad for. I'm just not. I mean, you could tell me it maybe is not a huge indication of what will happen in the playoffs, then I will believe that. But the fact of feeling bad that some guy's best players are playing in a game that's important to the Pacers doesn't matter to me. Screw, you know, f that.
So there's a lot we could talk about from this week, Adam, but I want to start with one specific thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first game of the week against the Sixers, they won the fourth quarter by 6 points. Adam, guess how many points they won that game by?
6 points.
6 points, there you go. Second game of the week, they beat the Timberwolves by 6 points in the fourth quarter. They won that game by 5 points. Third game of the week, they played the Timberwolves at home. They did not win the fourth quarter. However, they did have some nice clutch moments, including a Malcolm Brogdon game winner with about 18 seconds left. And then, of course, you all just saw the crazy Nuggets game where they win the fourth quarter by 15 points and win by 8. They had some fantastic clutch play this week.
Yeah, Malcolm Brogdon. I feel like it. I think I did this in one of our solo shows this week, but I think actually the back injury was sort of a helpful thing for his hand, right? I mean,
to let it heal, he was out.
Right, because before that, he had like his shot seemed a little off, and he didn't shoot great. I think in the Philly game, I think he was like, what was he, only 5-15 in that game, right? But he shot well the other three games, and he just like his shot just looks better, I guess, right? It looks a little more clean coming off his hand. Doesn't look like he's kind of like, you know, having to put more weight on his right hand or left hand because his right hand was hurt and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you get this broad in clutch with Oladipo clutch, I mean, I don't really know how this team gets beat in a close game, or at least, you know, unless another team's other clutch player goes toe-to-toe, basically.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, only one of them have the ball, but, like, who do you defend if you're the other team? Well, you have to sag off of one of them.
Right. I mean, after 2017-18, we screamed about we got to find a number two option in the clutch because their team are just double-teaming Vic and saying we're going to stop him, and we dare Sabonis, Turner, name, you know, Thaddeus Simbo, and should shoot the shot, right? Well, and even the same thing under the Paul George days the year before that, really, right? It was like when the Cavs, like, overloaded him and he wouldn't give up the ball to CJ Miles, and when he did, Miles missed it.
Right.
Now they have that. Like, I mean, if
– and they have Sabonis if both of those guys get cut off.
Well, what you end up doing is you do, like, this, like, double thing, but basically you leave a 4-on-3 with Sabonis and name Oladipo abroad and kind of pick and roll going.
Right. Right. You could just throw Justin Holiday or Doug McDermott in the corner. Cool. Okay. Can't really pinch in as far on that guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, I just feel like if you double team anybody in the Pacers, just one of the Oladipo or Brogdon, you basically create this like 4-on-3 matchup for two of the best 30, 35 offensive players in the league who can pretty much butcher. Especially if you're two of your best defenders are out there, it's basically playing 4-on-3 against weak defenders almost in one.
Right. Yeah. And Brogdon, like, what impressed me about him in the clutch, you know, not that Vic wasn't amazing with like his pull-up threes and crazy dunks, but like Brogdon, when everything is crazy and going on and the crowd's loud, and he's just so composed and relaxed, like I know that I'm referencing a tweet from our own people, but like the Locked On NBA tweet with the video of his game winner against Minnesota was so true. Like, he didn't have any expression. He just kind of like flipped it in, and that was it. Yeah, his dunk. He didn't change his face.
He slid over two guys and just turned around and walked to the end of the.
Yeah, he like just ran around the defender. I was like, okay, let's play defense. It's like that was the craziest play you've made the whole season, dude.
It's Kawhi-esque, right? He's the only guy
that would
be that way, right? I mean, even Kawhi hit the game winner against Philly was going nuts in the playoffs. And granted, it was a Game 7, whole other situation, but like, it's just like he expects to do it. Almost.
Yeah, he's so stoic, it's like frightening. It's like, remember Brad Stevens at Butler? They would win all these crazy games and everybody would be like, how is he not reacting? Like, that's how I feel like with Brogdon.
Well, when you expect to win, that's what happens.
Yeah, he sure does. Should we highlight him a little bit more, or is his clutch play enough of a representation of his week? Because he kind of, I feel like in a lot of these games, he kind of didn't really get it going until the end, and then he just took over and no one really cares.
So I guess with him, the question is, I mean, so I don't feel like he's the team's all-star, right? So I feel like he's their best clutch player, but I hate to say that he's not their best player because I think that's kind of weird to say, but I do feel like Sabonis, who I think is the one we want to highlight next, has really been their best player for probably especially like the last three games.
Sabonis with the first Pacers triple-double since, you know who it is, Adam? If you watch the broadcast, you would know.
Okay, I wasn't listening to the entire broadcast. I'm watching the game with a couple people, but hold on. So are we talking about Sabonis' last triple-double or the whole team?
The Pacers franchise's last triple-double.
I'm assuming it was Vic.
It was not Vic. Vic does not have one as a Pacer.
Was it Lance? Was it Lance in 17?
It was not Lance. Lance, his last triple-double as a Pacer was 2014. He was the second to last triple-double.
Okay, so what was the last one then?
The answer is George Hill.
George Hill, okay, interesting.
George Hill, February 27th, 2015, had 15, 10, and 12, and he shot 4-15. He just made a bunch of free throws.
I have a feeling once Vic returns, we'll see Brogdon get one or two of those.
Yeah, he's got he's a good rebounding guard. He's got a shot.
Well, especially if he's not happy to kind of play all down the perimeter, right? So if he's playing a little more defense,
yeah,
a little more of the like forward-type players instead of out in the perimeter and whatnot, he'll get a couple more rebounds, and he'll get assists, same numbers kind of thing.
So we know – we've obviously, like every Pacers person alive knows – how good of a passer Sabonis is. We've seen him a million times over do these crazy things. And tonight against the Nuggets, I think was kind of like it all comes together with his skill set where like they overloaded him like crazy, right? They had Jokic on him a lot, but they would send another guy when he rolled or squeeze someone in. And he did a great job. And I know, you know, you have to, with assists, you have to give credit to the shot maker, which was McDermott a lot in this game, but like he did an amazing job finding either the cutters or the guys in the corner who were wide open because of the way the Nuggets were defending him. You know, he just read the game so well this whole time.
Yeah, I hate to say it. I'm trying to think how to say this, but I think he had a better night than Jokic. I mean, if I had, I mean, I think
probably. What did Jokic end up with? 30-something.
What I hate to say is like
30-10-4. Yeah, probably.
But when you talk about like why Sabonis should be the center, you just put on these game tapes and you're like, that's why he should be the five at all times. And there should, you know, they should just build an offense around him almost in a way. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they kind of, I mean, you know, the way they're throwing it to him and just saying, all right, you read the game, find the right guy to hand it off to, do the pick. It's like, it's kind of insane.
Well, and it's, I mean, I'm kind of still beating around it, but it's basically what you say when this is why Turner shouldn't be on the floor with him.
Oh, no, I disagree with that.
So, no, I don't disagree with – I don't necessarily – I'm not making that case, but I think you throw on the tape of where you watch, like, you put, like, a lineup, let's say, Oladipo, Warren, Brogdon, McDermott, Sabonis, and, like, that might be your best five at times.
Oh, just, sure. Just at the close games, maybe. Definitely not.
No, and that's what I mean. Like, you put on the tape, and you're like, that should be the lineup you try to strive for. Not necessarily Turner, who is playing in the kind of the McDermott role, right, but is a little – not sure. As good a three-point shooter, not as good close, and that's the difference there. But maybe the difference in you can make it up, so it doesn't really matter, but – I think this is the kind of game where you like, especially the way they finish. It's like, whoa, do they really like? Turner's almost like a cherry on top of the ice cream, right? If you can get rid of him, it wouldn't be the worst thing. If you can turn something else, not the worst thing, but he's not necessarily needed. Any,
you know, so what you saw, what I saw with Turner in this game, just to pick something, yeah. Like with Jokic, you know, he obviously is so good posting up, and he had no trouble getting to whatever spot he wanted in scoring. But like Miles was good at containing Jokic and being able to like not be caught in no man's land and get back to the lob threat when it was there. None of the other centers could do that. It's yeah, like that kind of, it's that kind of skill that you're talking about with like the, he adds this to the lineup with the cherry on top stuff. And like, we already know he can shoot and he's finally like dribbling a little better recently and he's drives. But yeah, I agree with you that their best clutch lineup, especially if you just need one bucket, does not include him.
So I'll probably flesh out this argument later in the week when I do one of the solo shows. But if you think about it, like, the Pacers' whole reason of getting Goga is because they see him as a Turner light, but cheaper, right? So, like, in my opinion, right? So, if you think about it, like, right, Turner being the chair on top, if Goga could just do what Turner does, like, at, let's say, at, like, 80% level, then there's basically Turner becomes, like, an unneeded asset you can flip for something else, right? I mean, that's what it felt like. I mean, I agree that he doesn't.
If they have a lineup they can play 20 minutes a game with two centers that outscores the team every other team every time, yeah, you keep that guy.
Well, that, to me, that's why you go get Goga, right?
If it's a disaster in the playoffs, then we have another conversation.
Yeah, well, that's the key. But I guess when you talk about like the Sabonis Turner battle, I guess in the Pacers, I mean, I think you put the tape like this tonight and say this is why Sabonis is the better player. I mean, that's frankly it.
Yeah, he is definitely the better defender. Definitely not the better offensive player, that's for damn sure.
Yes, yes. So should we talk about McDermott real fast before we turn to some of the game preview?
Yeah, we should talk about Doug McDermott. My God. what was it last year? His big game was in Utah, and it was right after a game in Phoenix. So maybe these West road trips are just like when McDermott comes alive.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of game that we saw, what, from Bola in the playoff 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was last year.
Wow, it feels like so much longer ago, right? These are the kind of games, right, where the guy just scores like – no, it was 2 years ago. Definitely 2 years ago. Anyway.
What? McDermott wasn't on the team 2 years ago.
Not McDermott. From Bojan in the playoffs. This is the kind of game you'd see from that. Remember
Bojan? Yeah, there we go.
That kind of game. Sorry if you didn't get that first.
Yes.
2 years ago. It was that kind of game where just like everything you do, just get him the ball and tell him to shoot a three. And he'll find – you know what I mean? It's just like unconscious, it felt like.
Yeah, it wasn't even like the Nuggets were necessarily losing him per se. Like, their whole thing was shutting down Sabonis. So like, they were willing to let him get a bit more open than normal. But the way he was able to just, like, shift an extra couple of inches to the side and be open or read whatever action was happening and cut up to the wing instead of the corner, like, he just could not be stopped. And then he even had to cut to get under the basket for a layup. Like, with Doug McDermott, your leading scorer, something about A, the other team's coverage was a little off, but B, he was just finding all the space because he could not miss. He was ridiculous.
Yeah, and in the Nuggets' defense, if McDermott shoots his season average from three, they don't win this game.
No. So
that's why they probably –
what'd he end up, like, what was his actual from three percentage?
6-for-7, so that ends up being, like, probably –
3-for-7, yeah, they do.
No, lose, yeah, he goes 3 or 4-7. So even if he goes 4-of-7, which is above it, he ends up – it's being much closer at the end. So.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, and there's free throws. You never know. But, yeah, he had a pretty good week, like, in total. Like, I tweeted after the win against Minnesota at home He made 5 2-pointers in that game. And I know that sounds like not an impressive stat, but like Doug McDermott made 5 twos in one game.
Well, he did the same thing against the Timberwolves the first time, or he made 4 twos, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. He like all he and Jeremiah talked about it. JJ talked about it during the broadcast of this game where he's talking about like putting the ball on the floor a little bit more. Yeah, you can see it. He's like, teams are so they explained top locking on the broadcast, so I feel a little more comfortable talking about it. Like teams are top locking him and trying to make him not be able to go above a screen at the top of the key and make him go baseline. So he'll like cut and then dribble or come around the screen and dribble, like just to force him to defend him a little different. And it's working and he's scoring.
Yeah, it's his versatility as a player, we didn't see this last year. I mean, he's got a second and third option on offense in a way it didn't feel like he had last year. And that's why I thought was holding him back. And now it's just like, I mean, he feels Korver-esque to me in the way he's playing right now, like Kyle Korver just peaking. Exciting to see, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they haven't had a shooter like this ever. Like this is.
Oh, I'm trying to think. The last 40% shooter was George Hill that one year, but he didn't shoot like at this volume.
I wonder who that actually is.
The last
Pacers shooter to
Reggie be the one I think of, right? Reggie. I mean, Reggie.
There has to be someone since like Paul George never did it.
Well, he got close one year, I think.
Yeah, maybe he didn't. I want to look it up. Talk about something.
Well, yeah. Well, we've been at a spot there. No, it's like me. You spent all last year saying you pay for spacing, and I kept kind of saying no. You're not good enough, anyways. Well, this is when you pay for spacing. This is what you imagine, right? Is this
right?
Where he didn't have this effect last year, and you know, in teams like the reason that benching it works so well is because Sabonis is just an offensive monster, and then the team also have to focus on McDermott, which lets everybody else just kind of have free range, right? So then there's the free range for the holidays to both shoot open threes at all times, so they can go, you know, right? I'm gonna look up the stats real quick, but like what Justin Holiday has been shooting like a ridiculous rate the past 10 games, and he's up to like 40% from three. And Aaron Hall is at 41% because those guys are just taking like wide open threes half the time because nobody's guarding them because they're so focused on the other two players most of the time, or then McConnell's able to get, you know, these random like 8-foot 2-pointers because nobody decides to pick him up because they're like, we're so worried about Sabonis cutting the rim and so worried about McDermott on his backside. So it's
right.
It like opened up his bench unit for these three guys who are having, I mean, I don't know. I guess they're probably all three having career seasons, right? I don't know what McConnell's guest career is, but like,
hey, we're both idiots, by the way.
What?
We forgot Darren Collison existed for.
Yeah. He had that really, 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 really good year.
100%. And Bojan was over 40% last year.
But it wasn't the same. I mean, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. You're right.
The McDermott thing is like, it just feels different than any other type of player because it's like this is the kind
it's,
of player.
It's so quick too, it just flies up and they just, no, but just like, can't lose them at all.
Like I'm trying to think how many times the Pacers would get beat by these teams that have like this like one versatile player just can drain through, like the Korvers and I can't even know what's on my head, but like those type of players, right? And it feels like it finally feels nice to have one of those type of players where you can be like, yeah, we have our 3-point special student. Remember last year when we laughed at how the Jazz, like we did a mock trade, I think at one point with something with the Locked On Jazz host, David Luck, obviously. And he was like, what would we do first round for McDermott? We're like, who would pay a first round for McDermott? Well, now McDermott probably has first round value if you thought about it. Like, because if you see him doing this, it's like a whole nother thing.
This helps every single team. Like, this is just like you throw him out there and it works every time. It's like every team wants a guy like McDermott. It's crazy.
Yeah, and he can close games when he's on fire like this, which is what he did tonight. That's the
They didn't even care that Jeremy Grant was just destroying him around the basket. They're like, all right, go make a three. We're fine with that.
They traded 3 for 2s literally the entire fourth quarter. Right. That one.
Cute layup. Well, here's 3 points for us.
I mean, it was ridiculous. This may not be the first time. This is one of the few times where I saw the Pacers actually shoot more threes than their opponent. They beat them by 6.
Did they really?
They shot 29 threes.
I know they made way more, but I didn't know.
I've seen them make way more, but.
No, I know they made more tonight. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't know they took way more. Man, I feel like we focused way too much on this one game despite them having just a crazy week.
Well, so the reason I would focus on this game is because this is the first time I think they beat a really good team at full strength.
Right, and they were missing 3 starters. What?
Not full strength, but a team that had their best.
Right, this is their second best win of the year. I agree with that. Lakers being first.
I guess full strength throw, but like a team who feels like they have their best players. So like, you know, they beat Philadelphia twice without Embiid. That's like kind of an iffy win. Kind of like,
yeah, I get that.
Right, it's one of those ones where like at least Joe Jeter, you feel they should win and whatnot. Or like, I guess last time they did, they beat Boston. So last time I felt like they beat a team where like they should have like was good. I guess.
Yeah, Boston was a good win too.
Yeah. So
Raptors, no Siakam. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I agree. I think it's their second best win of the year. It's on the road against the.
Especially I think winning on the road too has something to it. When you go into a place like Denver where they don't win normally. It's just something. There's just something to it. You can't put like a value to it, but it just feels good to do this.
It did feel really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially start of a road trip, you know, you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's more important because of who they played next, because I think going 3-2 on this road trip is super important. And if they didn't win this one, they probably gonna start 0-2 on the trip because they have a back-to-back because they play Utah tomorrow. And that's what we're going to talk about next. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Indeed. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Well, Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help curate your short list of applicants fast. Also, add a skills test to your job post so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. The library of more than 50 skills tests range from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tool to make hiring decisions quickly and be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job at Indeed.com/LockedOn and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/LockedOn. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer valid only through March 31st, 2020. All right, Tony. So the Pacers play 4 games, all in the West Coast Arena.
I guess get your sleep, people. Take a nap, do something.
Yeah, so let's read some times for you real fast. Just they play at 9 o'clock in Utah, 9 o'clock in Phoenix, 10:30 in Golden State, and 9 o'clock in Portland.
Thank God that Golden State game's on a Friday.
Yeah, say
that Friday. That's crazy late.
You can stay up. So most of those games will probably end at 11:30. So you might be used to this Pacer podcast. That would say if you're in a different time zone, you're in Australia, whatever, this podcast, right, that we get it up by like 11, 12 range, right? I would say that's kind of a normal thing, at least for me. It will not be getting up that early. It might be more like a 1 to 2, so factor in that time range. I'm probably Eastern times right now, so factor in that to your – you know, if you're used, you know, I don't really know what the time zones very well, but if you're trying to factor that into when you might see a Locked On Pacers podcast on the kind of after the game. So,
All right, Adam, we're starting with the Jazz, and I want to talk first here.
Okay.
I know you really want, and you have a point, and David just tweeted the last 3 Pacers game scores against the Jazz. They have killed them, but we talk about the bars on Basketball Reference.
Yes.
The Jazz are just smoking teams right now, and this is a back-to-back, and it's the 2 altitude teams. And I know you're going to say they just have this antidote against the Jazz. And you're right, they do. And they probably have a chance because of that. But this is going to be such a tough game.
Yeah, so the Jazz have won 16 of 18, right?
And yeah, they are on fire. I think they're top 4 in the West now after like kind of limping for a bit.
Yep, they are the 4th in the West, according to you. And it looks like Mike Conley's back, right? No?
Yes, he just came back this weekend. Yeah. And that actually might not be helpful for them.
No, that actually might be the benefit. So here's what I'll say. I agree with every point, but the back-to-back, the altitude, this is going to be probably the toughest game they play all year because the Milwaukee one back against Houston was pretty tough without Brogdon. So one of the toughest games they're going to play all year. But I think a factor going for the Pacers is if you look at tonight's game, right, Turner only played 20 minutes. Yeah, Aaron Holiday only played 13. I guess McConaughey plays 22, but like there is, you know, Jeremy Lamb played 23, right? Is there a way those guys who played less minutes in Denver because of foul trouble with Turner, because of just not, you know, fitting into tonight's lineup, they could step up? Could this be the kind of game, which we've seen before, Aaron Holiday many times against this Jazz team, where he just has 25 points because he employs 30 minutes, you know, and they just decide, you know, roll with him over, you know what I mean? Like, could that, and that's the recipe to win. It's just, or like, is it, you know, one of those Turner games where he has 20 something, like that's how they beat this Jazz team. But I agree it's going to be very, very hard because of the back-to-back altitude, good team, everything.
Yeah, I wish – I want to pull it up while I'm talking. But, like, if I recall, the first time these guys played in late November, the Jazz kind of struggled with their bench. And I know that Conley hasn't been good for them, and I'm pretty sure he was pretty rough too. But, like, Jordan Clarkson is kind of a meme player. But he's been really helpful for them. They're actually getting scoring from their second. Okay, so yes, they had Moutier went 1 for 6. Jeff Green was 2 for 6. Like, they could not really shoot with their second unit guys who take a lot of shots. Jeff Green's not even on the team anymore. And now they have Jordan Clarkson, who, like, again, I just said he's meme, but like, he's a good scorer. Like, he's a good individual scorer. And he's really helped them quite a bit. So now they have a little more health, and they reshaped their bench to be better. Like, they're just a better team than they were the last time the Pacers played.
Yeah, as David Locke would say, they are – the Moutier is like a black hole in the bench, somebody who just kind of sucks the ball up and
– right.
Shots.
Yeah, and another thing about the Jazz, did you know that they are leading the league in three-point percentage, Adam?
Oh, really? They're up?
Yeah, so between our guy Bojan, who is making absurd numbers of threes this year, he's taking 7.3 a game and making 42%. Another bad mark on Nate McMillan's letting guys shoot resume. Him and Royce O'Neal is a really good shooter for them, and Mitchell's hitting 36% on pull-ups. Yeah, Joe Ingles is always a flamethrower, and Niang, another former Pacer, doing well for them. Niang is hitting 44% of three a game. Like, they get a lot of good shooters out there all the time, and that's like that, you know, around Gobert, who can only really do, not that he's limited necessarily, he's amazing at this one thing, but his offense is basically screen, roll, dunk. If you get a bunch of spacing around that, that's even more effective. So that helps their offense quite a bit.
Okay. So
that was a lot of information. Sorry.
Yeah. So I'm going to transition into kind of my butcher comment, but would you rather, as North Sowers, have Bojan or have TJ Warren to fit with the current Pacer team? Like, what's a better fit?
Honestly, Bojan might be a better fit, but they couldn't have done what they did if they kept him at his salary, right? So that's part of it.
So that's maybe ignoring the money.
If you ignore the money, I think Bojan's a better fit, right? I think Warren's definitely a better mid-range scorer. Like, he took a one-footed running baseline 20-footer in this game, and I was like, yep, I'm cool with that, which is the weirdest thing ever. But Bojan's a better shooter by a lot, and his floor spacing is valuable. And we saw last year, like, the big thing that changed for him is he could actually score off the dribble, which his first season in Indiana he couldn't do. So, obviously Warren's better off the dribble, but I think Bojan's spacing would have more value than the lack of off the dribble scoring.
Okay, and so you kind of made my point. That's why I think Bojan is my butcher. Ooh. Now, I I'm leaving the door open for you to take the one who probably should be, like, everybody butcher, but I'm trying to be an alternate here and pick somebody. I think we had a good game. I think this could be a Bojan revenge game-ish, right? I mean, I don't know if he could call it revenge because he chose to leave and whatnot, but whatever you want to say, this could be the kind of game where he's a really good guy.
His 30 points in DLF were his revenge game. He was their only good player the first
time. That's right. That game was such a blowout that I forgot.
I know. It just wiped it from my brain.
But, I mean, I think this could be kind of where he's a pretty nice night, you know, has a pretty good game. I mean, he is their second leading scorer. He is having an incredible year. I mean, I think we're going to look back on Bojan's career in like 5 or 6 years and think, you know, his last year, this year, and the next maybe 2 years are going to be like his peak of just him being like this, like, and becoming like, I don't even want to call it like borderline all-star, top 50 player, whatever you want to say.
Right.
I think we're going to look back at that.
I'm going to look back on his career disappointed he didn't come in the league at 23 when he got drafted.
Well, that's the other part of it, right? Because he came so late and it was like, and then, you know, when he came in the league, he was a specialist or, you know, couldn't play deep with the rap on him. It was kind of like, you know, he was a good three-point shooter, but he wasn't so good that you could play him on moments. And now he's become just a complete player. And it's kind of amazing to see when he got some good coaching in Indiana, what happened to him and whatnot. And I think he will probably say when he looks back at it, like, him not getting an extension, because right, he wanted like 4 for $50 from Washington, right, at one point. And then coming to Indiana on maybe a little lower deal was better for his career in the long, because he got some much better coaches than he would have ever got with Washington. Like, just way better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's your butcher?
Well, as much as I have this massive affinity, as listeners will know, for Rudy Gobert, it's Donovan Mitchell, right? The dude scores 25 points a game and makes 7 floaters on every team's face and can actually shoot threes off the dribble. And like, he's not their whole offense, obviously, but like, he's the reason their offense is so good. They have this guy who's amazing that you have to have laser focus on all the time, and it lets other guys roll, and it lets other guys scoot around the perimeter, and it lets Mike Conley have a ton of space to be the secondary initiator. Like, he's just so good.
Yeah, I should first apologize, because I know Bojan's your favorite player, was your favorite Pacer, so I feel bad. But I really don't.
I love that. He mostly was my favorite just because I spent the 2017 summer just, like, defending that dude to the death, and he proved me right.
And he turned out to be a great signing. So with Donovan Mitchell, the way I view him, and he's been playing a little more point guard now that Conley's been out and whatnot, is – to me, he is kind of what, like, Vic was in 2017, but at, like, 23, right? So that means his ceiling is just immensely higher. Like, he came in the league as good of a player as Vic was that year. So that means that guy, like, who knows what he's going to be by the time.
He's our best draft hit on this podcast. We both really wanted
him. I know. We paid to show a trade up from what we were 5 picks away. It was Leafs, was number 18, right? And he went 13.
Right. All right, flip side. X Factors. And you went first. You're first again.
Oh, X Factors. Okay, well, I'm going to save my bench one for later.
Aha, yes, I also am. I hope we don't use the same game.
So I think I kind of gave it away when I said, but I think my X Factor is Aaron Holiday.
He weird game for him against Denver.
So. Yeah, he's had a couple.
Even play at all in the third. They just went full Brogdon.
Yeah, well, I think that was part of, like, they thought they must have saw they could win or felt like, you know, there was something.
They were right.
I mean, they were right. They was. He's been kind of – a little more spotty of late, right? So if you go back to
kind
of the beginning of, so really the game, the Philadelphia last game before the new year, his stats are kind of down. So, right, he's like 8.8 points per game on like 38, 33 shooting splits, which isn't great. But then if you pull back like the previous eight games, you get some really good splits. So maybe it's just kind of a slump for him. He's only had like four double-digit games in that like 10-game run right there. So it's been a struggle for him. I don't know if it's because they're – I really don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know if it's just like he's in a cold streak, if he's – you know, I know he started some games in that run and that could have been an issue, or he's better off starting. I don't know, but I think he's the X factor because he didn't play a ton of minutes, and he's the kind of guy who could just sort of spark this team, you know, to get, you know, on a team that needs a guy on a back-to-back to just kind of push them. He could be the kind of guy that's like, let's go out there and score 121 points again and beat the Jazz by 20.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that pick. And they don't have the greatest, like as much as I just talked up Jordan Clarkson, like Jordan Clarkson and Moody are not good defenders. So I usually against the Jazz, it's so easy for me to just lean on the Miles Turner crutch, but the thing is, we're far enough in the season that I think we've seen enough teams do it to know that Turner's going to get guarded by the four, not the five. So it's not really as easy, you know, it doesn't happen as much. But still, because Sabonis plays so much on the perimeter and at the elbows, he still pulls the opposing team center away from the rim a little bit. So minus Sabonis, because it's very important that, A, you know, he's reading the game well to get guys by Gobert with his passing or his handoffs and sets good screens. But, B, you know, if he shoots it, two of those 20-footers he takes a game and makes both of Gobert, like that'll pull him out just a tiny bit more. So important for Sabonis to have a good game to neutralize as much of Gobert as they possibly can.
Yeah, I think that the combination of Sabonis will be a key point if they win the game. We'll be looking back at that. That
would right.
be kind of right. I'll mention there. You think they win or lose?
Yeah, I think you can schedule this loss, unfortunately. Yes. You know, I agree with you. Like, I hate saying that before the game starts because it feels like an excuse, but like Denver Utah back-to-back is just brutal. Like, the altitude's so bad, you heard this on the broadcast, they traveled early on purpose to practice in Denver instead of at home. You know, that's a very unique thing to do.
I've been to Denver one time. I remember I used to play tennis in high school, so I was doing some running there. Man, it hurts to run there.
Yeah,
so it's from my only experience I have in Denver, but man, it sucks. So I can't even imagine having to play a basketball game and then go with elevation, maybe not as high, but still pretty high the next night. Ugh.
Right. They're the two teams that legitimately every year clearly have home court advantage. So yeah. I just think it's a scheduled losses. Even if they match up really well, it's like it's just too hard.
I agree with you. All right. So let's move on to the next game. So the Pacers take on Phoenix on Wednesday night. They will have a break between this game. The Suns, though, might surprise most people. They
are. Yeah, hey, well, let's clap for the Suns. The Suns don't suck out of that.
They don't suck. Now, they gave away T.J. Warren, who is now turning into one of the better players. Maybe one of the more
– revenge game for sure incoming, like 100%.
Yeah. But let's – some numbers real quick. So the Suns are now a middle-of-the-pack team. So they're 18-24, ninth in the West. They're very much in the race for the eight spot out there. They are 16th in offense, 18th in defense. And they are ninth in pace. So they've actually slowed it down a little bit. I believe they used to be top five in pace, but that's kind of why they were miserable.
Yeah, Rubio missed some time and they dropped there a little bit.
No, I mean last year I'm talking about. Like last
year.
Oh,
gotcha.
In the previous year, I believe like previous year they ranked in the top 10 in pace, or even, you know, like 2 years ago they were third in pace and they won 21 games. Like that's what I mean. Like,
right.
They were playing so fast they weren't able to win, basically.
Yes.
Some injuries real fast. So Cameron Johnson's day-to-day, but I don't think he plays significant minutes in them, right? And then Kaminsky and Oubre are both. So Kaminsky is out and for a while, so he will not be playing. And then Oubre's day-to-day as well. Concussion, so I don't know if he's going to play or not. These
are all three of those guys are 20-minute-plus guys for them.
Okay, Cameron's a rookie, isn't he?
He's a rookie, but he's a flamethrower shooter. He's
okay. Really, he's knocked down. We have seen what – have we seen Phoenix yet? I'm
not
blanking.
No, we have not seen
Phoenix. I don't watch a ton of Phoenix. I've seen a lot of Booker. And early on, I watched a little bit of it, especially when Aaron Baines was kind of like killing it at 34 minutes a game. But since he got hurt, they've been kind of in a tailspin.
Yeah, so the Suns are another data point on my good point guard play is the most important. I got to quit using point guard for this because that's not technically true because LeBron counts in this instance. Good lead ball handler play is the most important thing to take a bad team to not bad. And I know we all like didn't want – Ricky Rubio this summer on the Pacers. But Ricky Rubio is, you know, for all his flaws that we didn't want him here for, doesn't suck. Ricky Rubio is a good player. And he's been really helpful for this team. He's over 9 assists a game. He's a great passer. He pushes the pace. He's smart. He doesn't turn it over very often. And now the Suns, look at that. They don't suck. They have quality point guard play. And the other thing is that Booker is at an all-star, for sure all-star level this year. He's been super good. So they finally have, like, capable players everywhere. And look at that. The Suns are pretty good.
So is Rubio your butcher?
No, Rubio's not my butcher.
Okay, so then I that's fine. That's fine.
I mean, you can pick Booker if you want.
No. I want to ask one question before we do a whole butcher thing.
Okay.
So if you're the Suns, would you rather – so I think you probably did, but would you rather have – because, right, it was either Rubio or Warren.
They traded Warren's money so they could keep Oubre's rights within their cap space, I think, instead.
And still sign Rubio.
Yes. That's what it was, yes.
So, I mean, basically, you know, we say they gave away Warren when I, but really all they were doing was trying to get off Warren's money to get Rubio, I think is the right way to put it.
Yeah, they were trying to I think they had to do it to, like, order their transactions in the right order, you know what I mean, or something like that. It was something funky, but yes, you're right.
So, I think both teams would satisfy with what happened, especially considering that Rubio didn't have Pacers and Brogdon did, right? So, I think it ended up being kind of a win-win for everybody involved.
Obviously, it looks terrible for the Suns, and I understand, like, dunking on them for trading TJ Warren for cash. But, like, yeah, like, Kelly Oubre has been really good for them. You know, I don't want to gloss. Like, I think he's averaging more points per game than Warren, actually.
He's 18.3, and Warren's probably around that.
Yeah, I think they're both teams are happy. Now, obviously, if you could have – like, if they could just have TJ Warren, maybe they would take him, given that they could probably get positive value for him instead of having to give him away. But yeah, it worked out for everybody for sure. And TJ Warren's going to come in with a heart of fire to kill these guys for trading him.
Can't wait for him to score 40 points. Should we both do it? He's our X factor, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Let's call us both our X factors.
100%. You might as well put MJ on the Pacers for this game.
So I picked Butch. That's nice. I picked Booker, the Butcher last time. Who do you want to pick for Booker?
Oh well, then I'll pick Booker first. Yeah. Okay. I have here's my crazy Booker stat for you, Adam. As much as we all call Devin Booker the shooter, Devin Booker is shooting 57% on twos this year. So Devin Booker is scoring from everywhere. He is nasty. He's driving all over dudes. He's shooting 75% from 0 to 3 feet. So just
okay. I'm gonna look it up. What is he shooting? Man,
nuts at the rim. Like
That's Oladipo level that one year that Oladipo was really good.
Yeah. So Booker is like – Booker is 3-level scoring now, like hard to guard. So
can I modify my X-Factor real fast?
Jeremy Lamb?
No, I was going to say it's Miles Turner for protecting the rim.
Yeah, okay. Miles Turner is also a good
– That's what won the game last year when they played in Phoenix was he actually got switched on to Booker and stopped him going into the rim and scoring.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So Booker's incredible this year. So tough guy to guard.
Yeah.
I actually 6 assists. He can pass too. So good luck.
So I think my butcher is I'm gonna pick the guy who has just returned, now played 12 games, DeAndre Ayton, the guy who clearly diluted his pee for some stupid reason, probably because he smoked pot and didn't want to test positive for it.
Oh no way. I think it was one of those like hide PEDs things.
Oh, you think he was saying PEDs? Interesting.
I think he was, and he did the thing to hide him, and then got caught with that. I think that's what I heard. I don't know. I don't know.
I assume it's pot for most of these players because, like, I'm assuming they all smoke weed. So, like, they're. But I guess, you know, I don't know what the NBA rule is smoking weed, to be honest. I'm not sure if it's that big of a deal or whatnot. Anyways, moving on from that.
5-game suspension.
Yeah, he has. I think he's really good.
He is really good.
Just, like, box score. Like, he's just going to. Here he's like DeAndre Drummond, like a reincarnation of him. Basically, it's like he's gonna get you 18 and like 14 every freaking.
He's so athletic though, like that's where he separates from Drummond a little bit.
No, for sure, but like right now, especially in this raw stage where he's not really like he's still on the outside of this team, sort of like trying to like because he's not the focal point of the offense because Booker is, and they're sort of trying to run things with the guards and whatnot. But he is just he's a really good player still.
He is really good. Guys who play above the rim, like if he gets even 15 feet of range, he'll be really hard to guard.
I mean,
he'll be able to pop instead of roll.
He's going to be banging, I mean, with probably Turner and with Sabonis a little bit, maybe even Gogo a little bit. We'll see. And it's just, I imagine he'll have 18 to 20 points, if I had to guess, because all those kind of centers always beat the Pacers. Bam, Whiteside back in the day, Drummond, Embiid, Gobert, you name it. They always do. It's always due to the Pacers. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The Suns really just like, I know they get dumped on for the Warren thing from Pacers people, but like they quietly had a pretty good summer. Like they have 10 or 11 like useful NBA players that can help them win games. So
which is huge, right? They changed their
coach. What's up?
They changed their coach, which is also huge.
Yeah, Monty Williams has been good for them too. They did a lot. They had a good summer. Like it's hard to rationalize that, but they did a good job.
They became from I think the incompetent laughingstock team to a team that just is like competent. And then we'll see if
they're on the right track. Good for the Suns, man.
If the young talent pans out of Aiden pops in a year or two and Booker continues to go up there and they're able to add somebody
else. They're like one piece from the playoffs, probably.
Yeah.
They're ninth in the West.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the movie is for them. I don't know what the cap space and stuff like that is like, but like, you know, could they go out and get some kind of top level guard? That's kind of the next move, I guess. But I don't know. They seem, but certainly they're making strides towards improvements for sure.
Yeah. You know who's not, Adam? Oh, I'm sorry. I think the Pacers are going to win this game, but I was going to say the Warriors are not.
Yes, the team. Yes, I think the Pacers win this one too. Yes. So we will talk about the team that has not been improving this year, that has sort of been in a tailspin, but I'm sure it will be good in the future. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with the Locked On Network to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Pacers is a great way for your local business to reach the passionate Pacer fan just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives you a local company the unique ability to reach a local podcast listener. Not just any podcast listener, but a Locked On Pacers podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Pacer fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated, with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On Pacers podcast. Local fans love to support local business. Text the word advertiser to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve your goals on this Locked On Advertising Network. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. All right, Tony. So this might be the first time we've done this podcast where the Warriors are not the best team in the NBA when the Pacers play.
The opposite, Adam. They have the worst record in the NBA.
I know, but this is the first time we've done this podcast together. We've previewed a Warriors game, and the Warriors were not the best team in the league that we did not think they won the championship.
Yeah. Remember 2 years ago when the Pacers swept them? They played them without like KD and Clay and Steph or something ridiculous.
Yeah, they had that. They won by like 4 points in Golden State, and then they came home and smoked because they played in the last like 2 weeks of the season when the Warriors had already won 60 plus games.
Yeah, they were already like arresting everybody. Yeah, the Steph won't be back till March 1st. Clay maybe out for the year, probably out for the year. Who knows? Draymond basically just plays when he wants.
Like, I was wondering why is Steph even coming back?
I don't know, for fun.
Like, why not even get hurt, probably, right?
He's coming back 3-1, which is his number. I think that's kind of cool.
Oh, you jerk. That's so mean, though. Put that on him. God, that's just terrible.
He's going to play in Banker's Life, which is fun. The game's on ESPN.
Oh, cool. Well, when is it? Maybe it's March 18th.
Probably. March 18th. It's far away, yeah. Their injury report, though, even be like, obviously, Stephen Clay, the guys like Draymond just missed their last game with a finger, air quotes.
Injury. Oh, my God. The injury report is half the team.
Yeah, Jacob Evans, their first-round pick last year, missed their last game. Kevon Looney, a good player in the paint. No timetable for his return. An ab injury. And GR3, Pacers, not legend necessarily, but like a cult legend, I guess. Would be
the cult favorite, I think is right.
Cult favorite. Yes, also was out for their last game. So who knows how many of those guys will recover 5 days from now. But, yeah, the Warriors kind of suck, especially if D'Angelo Russell doesn't play.
Hold on, kind of suck. They're 10-34 and 15 in the West. They're on pace to win.
What's their record when D'Lo plays? Is there a way to have that information?
I'm sure there's something. But their record –
that can't be as bad.
They're on pace to win less than 20 games, Tony.
That is crazy.
What did the team win? 58 games last year, 60 games last year, or something? 57 last year, 58 the year before, 67, 73, 67. This team.
All right, they're 7-19 when D'Lo plays. That's like not the worst. They're 3-15 when he does not play.
No, when D'Lo plays, they're going to go like 25.
That is the worst. Seven. Yeah, that's kind of the indictment of their team, right? They're like their second best player on their healthy roster is like Alec Burks. They're just bad.
Yeah, they're all in for the draft, man. They're either going to trade that pick for somebody else. Like, they're going to somehow steal Giannis some stupid way.
No,
they're not. Or, you know.
Okay, Stephen A. Smith.
I'm just making a joke.
I think Stephen A. is hilarious, but that one I was like, come on, man.
They're all in for who we think they're going to pick? LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards?
LaMelo or Anthony Edwards, yeah.
You don't think James Wiseman sneaks in somehow?
Nope.
Dude's 7-1 because of jump shot.
Man, I get that. He's also not good at basketball. It's a big factor.
Oh, my God. You are such a dab.
I will stick by this until I die. I think he's the second best center on Memphis.
Oh my God! Okay, let's talk about this game. this should be the easiest game for the Pacers all season.
Which means you're going to lose because I agree with you. But yeah, I mean, they're like a lot of teams we talk about this year that are bad. Is, you know, Russell can pass 6 assists a game guy, but their next best assists per game guy that's healthy is Alec Burks at 3.1, and he is not known for his passing. They just don't have a ton of ways to create buckets for other guys. So outside, you know, if you like, not necessarily let D'Lo do his thing, but if you just stay home on your guys while D'Lo does his thing, like, they shouldn't be able to score enough to beat you.
Is there a chance Russell's traded before this game?
I kind of doubt it. It's kind of hard to like find the right. The only team that's really seems like going for him is Minnesota, and it's really hard to like cobble that trade together before the summer because of hard cap stuff for the Warriors.
Okay. All right. So I think.
But maybe. I mean, always maybe.
You went first last time. I'm going to go first this time. I think Russell's the butcher, obviously.
Yeah. Well, damn. Okay. Yes. He is very good, and the rest of their team is not. So
you should pick the other guy who's sort of leading them in minutes.
Yeah. There's 16 points a game from Burks is impressive. And he's
leading them in minutes, I was saying.
Oh, JR3. He's good.
I don't know.
I like JR3 quite a bit, but he is not enough of a difference maker to be a butcher.
Okay. So Alec Burks, maybe.
I'm not picking Alec Burks either.
Draymond?
I am picking Draymond, yes.
Okay.
Except, you know, we've learned this year that, like, we always knew this, but the extent of which, like, Draymond made or Steph made Draymond an all-star, like, obviously his defense is still amazing this year, but without the spacing and ability to run fast and make passes that Steph allowed Draymond to do, because, like, he's still really smart and can read the game. It's just, it's so plugged and gross without this superstar making everything easy and spaced out that his offense is so horrible. Can I ask a question? But he's still amazing. What's up?
What do you think Draymond's career high in points is per game?
Points per game career high? Like 11 probably?
Okay, so he got 14 one time.
Okay.
15, 16. I mean, it's weird. This is how I've been hitting him. His box score stats are just kind of garbage.
All of his value on offense is that as a role man, he makes super – like Sabonis this year. He makes just super quick decisions. And
the pace.
That catches the defense off guard. And when you have Steph, Clay, KD, that's all you really have to do is find the right guy right away. So
it's weird because his box score sets be like, he was slim, like he's not a Hall of Famer, but like I just feel like he is one eventually someday.
Yeah. You know, I mean, his defense was insane. Like whatever, three-time defensive player of the year.
Changed the game. I mean, it's weird, but like that the him, Steph, and Clay changed the way basketball is played. And
right. They are small ball.
Yeah. So. All right. So what's your X factor?
He's really only a one-time defensive player of the year. I did not know that.
Well, because he kept losing Kawhi for stupid ass reasons.
Yeah. Okay. As much as D'Lo is awesome on offense, their guard defense is atrocious between Russell and Burks. And then off the bench, like they're playing their two-way guys a bunch of minutes to try to even have guys on the court with Steph out. So, their point of attack defense is not particularly awesome. They, are low in the league in steals. You know, they just don't read the game super well with those guys. So Malcolm Brogdon should have no trouble beating a guy on the perimeter, setting up something on offense. And even faster guys, McConnell and Aaron Holiday should do well. But I pick Brogdon.
All right. Well, I'll pick the other side of the Brogdon duo. That is a bonus.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I mean, I was going to pick Brogdon, but you took him from me, so I'm going
to
pick the
other. If Draymond plays, it's hard for me to pick Sabonis, but if Draymond does not play.
I'm assuming – I don't know if Draymond's going to play. I don't know. Is he even trying as hardy when he plays now?
No, no way.
That's the thing. Like, I agree if we saw peak Draymond for sure, but I'm not sure we're going to – I think. But maybe Sabonis abuse him a couple of times, that gets the angry Draymond out there. But I think Sabonis is in for – he just, you know, puts up 20 points every other night, it feels like. So this could be
one. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think the Pacers are going to beat the Warriors. So
I do, too. I think this is their second win on this, or third. Well, third win. We'll call it, I think
probably third. Yeah, I think third.
All right, so then the fifth game on the fifth game road trip and the last game before the Chosen One returns. Wow, that was really kind of weird. Where Victor Oladipo returns.
Wow, that's crazy.
It is crazy. We'll be doing a show to this podcast at probably like 1 a.m. on East Coast time. So really,
no kidding.
Really fun.
No kidding.
Yes. So, Pacers take on the Blazers, who my surprise people are actually not as good as they've been in the past. Now, I don't know. They've been dismayed.
Wait, what? Hassan Whiteside's team is worse than people thought?
Okay, but this team was
– Wait. No, no, way. That never happens.
All right. So, some numbers real fast. They're 14th in offense, 24th in defense. Some injuries real fast. Zach Collins is going to be out for a while, so he would not be playing. He used to be one of the important players. Rodney Hood is out for the season. Scala BCA is also out for a bunch of times. CJ McCollum was day-to-day, so who knows about that? He hasn't played. Definitely could be a huge point. And obviously Nurkic, who broke his leg last year, is out. I don't know when he's supposed to return, but it's a late season on B-ball ref. They recently made a trade, right, for Ken?
They did. They tried to cut a bunch of tax money in a stealth, and they made it look good by getting guy that people think is good but is not in Trevor Ariza. I was admittedly wrong about Trevor Ariza.
Yeah, he's like, it's like his career just keeps going. It feels like
he's just bad now. Like, it's kind of ridiculous that teams keep.
Is he okay? Because like he just like there was what 2 years ago he was actually kind of good for the Rockets for like that.
And
he was like,
yeah, the Rockets were the perfect fit for him. Play defense and then don't move.
Yeah. So, as long as Lillard plays, his team's going to be hard to beat, especially at home.
Just, right.
Lillard is that good.
Insanely good player.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they would just blow this whole thing up so you could go get one of the McCollum Lillard type of players for the Spacer team someday. But
Dame is. I feel like that's why I know that this is off topic, but like their trade saved them tax money and like didn't really move the needle negatively for them, right? Like it's not like Bazemore and Anthony Tolliver were like saving their season, but like it made them a little worse. And making your team worse to save money when you have a superstar
in prime,
how are you going to get prime? Like, come on, man.
Well, Dame's problem is going to be
slap in the face. I know you're 18-26, but just come on.
So the thing with Dame's problem is going to be is one, he wants to be in Portland like forever, like just the way he always.
I love that about him.
So unless it's going to be a West situation, I don't see him trading. Two is their ownership, right? So their owner unfortunately recently passed away, and it's kind of the whole thing. And you know, before it was also they were also he like I remember 2 or 3 years ago there was like an article
about how
Dame went and met it was the late Paul Allen co-founder of Microsoft back in the day, and like he met with him and they discussed something, and that's why Dame wasn't going to get traded. Like he wanted to stay, and they discussed they're going to make the team better, all this stuff. But now I don't know, and who know? I don't really know who on the team's going to be sold or not. That's a question. I mean, it's just kind of this team needs to be blown up really because it's kind of like the way the Raptors were, right? You're okay. You're probably second. You know, they made the conference finals last year because of kind of lucky seeding and whatnot. But you're not going to win a championship, and it's just time to move on and figure something else out. And certainly, maybe they're waiting for that move, right? Maybe, I mean, they could have been the team.
Well, I think they probably think they'll be good when Nurkic, and I think they're right that they'll be good when Nurkic is back. And Whiteside's not on their team.
But I guess they could maybe assume that the Lakers won't be as good because LeBron will age another year. But like, aren't they going to probably be still fourth in the West? Behind at least the top, the two.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobility in being a top four seed. Who cares?
Oh, you're right. That's true. I mean, they pitch it all the time. I guess to me, it's very. It's like they've been together for what now? What do we think? 4 or 5 years of the same roster. It feels like, if not more. Like it just feels like at some point, like you either got to make one of those like push the chip in, move and break up McCollum Lillard and go after like a Kawhi level player, right, for 1 year and try to do it, or you just got to just kind of blow it up. I don't know.
Yeah, and. That kind of leads into that doesn't really lead in a little bit. Like they just don't have a ton of pieces around those guys, but that was how I forced my segue here. That my X factor is the bench for this team because we love Dame and he's going to be amazing. He's probably going to score over 30 points. And McCollum seems to do well against the Pacers all the time. And Melo's actually like been good this year, which is crazy. But then outside of those guys, they have like nothing. And they just traded one of their better, I mean, he starts sometimes, but like Bazemore is one of their better reserves, and they just don't get anything. Like Scal is not very good, and Anfernee Simons is a guy who, like, he's got a ton of potential. He looks super athletic, but he's not super good yet. And Hezonja, like, all their bench guys are just kind of not good.
This isn't fair, Tony. You picked the X Factor last time. I purposely held the bench. I had to pick him for this game.
I was holding it for this game too. We can both do it.
Okay, I know, but like, like you went first. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna save the bench. I'm gonna use it. Of course, you come in and just stand. It's fine.
Yeah, we're both doing the bench because their bench sucks. It really does. And you know, they're obviously very good with their starters because of the guys I named. And
Mario Hezonja is playing minutes. Your bench terrible, man.
That's true. He's playing over 15 minutes
last game. He played 20 minutes the last time they played against.
Like, maybe this X factor shouldn't be the bench then, right? Like if they just play Lillard to even like a -5, they could lose to Lillard by 5 with him on the floor, and I still think they would win pretty easily.
Yeah, so I feel like they should win this game, and this is the only game.
I think they match up pretty well with them. That's why I think they should win.
Yeah, it's just, I'm nervous about it. Like the Utah game, I expect them to lose. This is the game where they should win, and they could lose. And they're one of the three, I guess, other games.
They even won in Portland for forever, too.
Yeah, I don't know. Last time they won in Portland. I think it had to be didn't PG? No, he lost in overtime there.
Like, I forget who's talking about. I think it's like 10 or 11 in a row.
God, it's the Pacers, Portland.
Well, you said, yeah, someone was talking to me about it on Twitter with both Denver and this one. And then obviously, well, you look this up, the butcher categories is any of those three, Melo, CJ, and Dame. And I can't believe I'm putting Melo in there, given what I thought of him before the season. But we can both pick Dame if we're both picking the bench, right? Can we just do that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I pick Dame or McCollum, either one.
Yeah. And they're both good at, they can score out of the pick and roll themselves or get to the rim or hit a ridiculous distance three or. You know, they're not like awesome on defense, either of them, but they're just so good three level scorers that they're so hard to guard.
All right. So I've got a stat for you. Who do you think was the leading scorer in the last time the Pacers beat the Trailblazers?
Wow. I actually think I know this.
Okay, tell me the name. Give me a name.
Is it Mike Dunleavy?
No.
Oh, dang.
I thought someone was the right team. You're close. He was a second leading scorer.
Dang. Okay, then I don't know.
Danny Granger.
Oh, well, duh. If I'm on that team, I probably should have.
2007-8, they won 95-89 in Portland. It's the last time they've won there. They got
They just showed this on the broadcast. I'm so stupid.
I probably saw it too, but didn't
you know who the head coach for the Blazers was that game, Adam?
McMillan.
It was Nate McMillan. Yeah, I should have known that. I just saw that. Dang it.
So I'm trying to remember what year
it was. It all comes full circle, doesn't it?
There was a year where Paul George got them really close to winning in Portland. They just barely lost.
We are off topic, but I'm curious.
Yeah, there's in Portland in 2013-14, Paul George had 43 points. I remember that's wow. Huge coming up party for him, and they lost by four. But
yeah, another thing about this game that I think will be interesting is I just think Hassan Whiteside's junk, and I know his stats look great, but like I can't describe it. He just like is so like on the possessions he's not involved, he's just like a statue. He's like DeAndre Jordan to me.
But he does own Miles Turner.
He does own Miles Turner. He gets hella rebounds against Miles Turner. He averaged like 20 a game against the Pacers 2 years ago. So that makes him a factor, I guess. I did forget about that. But he's just so statuesque to me that he doesn't scare me. And he'll probably be on Sabonis, right? He won't even be on Turner, so who cares?
Yeah, you think they win or lose?
Ah, man. I do this every time where I pick every individual game and then I say, but I probably just think they'll win this many games this week. I think they'll go 2-2 this week, losing to Utah and Portland. As much as I think they have a shot against this team and can win, especially because they can win the bench minutes, like, team is just so freaking good.
I think they win. I think they go 3-1 this week.
Very nice. Oh, we haven't updated our sheet, have we?
No. So real quick, because I got lost on this land of basketball. Every matchup.
It's a crazy thing, man. People can track everything these days.
Did you know there was a team called the Indianapolis Olympians?
Yes, I did. Dylan Hughes wrote about them.
Who wrote about them?
Dylan Hughes wrote about them for the Fieldhouse.
Oh, I didn't. I should have paid attention to one thing.
It was pretty cool. I didn't know it was a thing. It was cool.
I'm gonna read, pull that article up right now to read.
It's really old. It's called Before the Pacers, but it was really good. I didn't know about half the stuff in it.
See, I didn't know about the Indianapolis Olympics.
There we go.
But I saw.
Okay, Adam, we're both at 23 correct predicted games.
But I guess I probably have a better chance of finishing because they're gonna win more games than they lose. Than
yeah, most likely. Most likely.
Well, I probably picked the wrong games.
Yeah, that's what really matters here. So we, before the season started, had them 1-3 this week, although Golden State obviously is in a very different situation.
Yeah, should we be able to rewrite that?
No, it's more fun to see how this goes.
So the Indiana was Indian Olympians. Sorry, they played in the old Hinkle Fieldhouse back in the day. Reading Dylan's article currently.
Yeah, it's cool, man. He dug in the rabbit hole for this stuff.
Man, that is interesting.
Historic documents, linking to PDFs. Yeah, he went in. It was cool.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, I'm going to enjoy this article.
Yeah, you go for it. Yeah, everybody go check out the Fieldhouse. We do a bunch of good stuff there, even though we've been posting less often recently. Yeah, it should be a good week. And, like, I know that obviously it matters to do well on a road trip. But, like, even if they just survive it, just knowing the momentum they'll get after it with Victor Turner at a bunch of home games.
Like, so, Tony has to fight. This is the last week we won't be able to talk about Victor Oladipo as a Pacer.
I know. It's crazy. It is so crazy. And they did so well there the last week that, like, all like again, just a 500 week is just enough to hold your momentum through, right, from your big stretch to Vic coming back.
So
just don't totally blow it against the Suns, basically, is this week.
So I want to give just a funny thing I heard this week. So I came home this weekend because I have the day off on Monday from work, and my girlfriend's birthday this week, whatnot. So I was talking to my dad, and he watched a lot of Pacers games, and kind of he's probably I wouldn't call him as like you know into it as we are, but he watched the games on Steamer, and he's like, wait, so when Vic returns, who's starting? So I told him starting five. And the first thing he says, like, oh, that's a really good starting five. They might that was like his only thing. He's like, oh, and then he started doing some math. He's like, they could actually win a couple playoff series, maybe.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. Again, I know we'll talk about the 2 seed because it's in grasp, and I already said this in the show, but at some point we'll have to sit down and be like, just get a top 4 spot. Like, it's so obtainable this year that you just
– Yes.
Hosting a series.
Honestly. They play Toronto 3 times in February. Those will be key games, all 3 of those.
Those will be key games. One more win against Toronto, and they can't lose it on the head-to-head.
They already got the season series against the Sixers, and they won one against Boston the same.
They already can't lose it against the Sixers.
Yeah, and they need one more against Boston to do the same. So, yep. All right. So you got anything else, Tony?
I'll have a fun article about TJ McConnell out for those of you listening. If you're still here, go read it.
Well, they'll still be here because this they'll be listed, you know, for us, we're recording at 11:45, but sometimes, but you'll be listening at a normal hour when you're in your car or whatnot. So it's fine.
Please go read it. It will be fantastic.
Yes, you should go read it. So you can follow Tony at TEASTNBA, me at FreeMadam5, and our podcast at Locked On Pacers. As always, we bring you the Pacers podcast 5 days a week, and we bring you a new one tomorrow after the Jazz game. Have the rest of your day.